back saying that, well, maybe the reviewers did not quite understand the whole flow of things that needs to occur. And that's why we said that, okay, let's try to work an example. And talk about, well, this dynamic thing and the autonomic stuff is just one aspect, right? But then even before that, we have to give the reviewer some intuition and some details about how we're going to do the initial mapping of resources, right? So we have some equations there and so on.
Right.
But I think through the example, it will be much more clear what exactly we mean by all of that, right?
Right.
So to have an example where we say, okay, here's a model that the user of the system would like to simulate with the properties. Here is the experimental infrastructure, and then there is a first stage which does the mapping of the various emulation elements and the mapping of various simulation elements to this infrastructure, right?
Mm-hmm.
And here are the time dilation factors and how it is going to be set up initially,
right?
So that example, it could be a very simple example, right? Mm-hmm. As long as people can understand well how to scale it up to a much bigger
and look at the entire thing as a whole.
Right. Yeah. So we can give, you know, specific examples for how that mapping will occur. And then, okay, once the experiment starts, then there is this other process which is the dynamic monitoring and changing of the TDF, and then we need to say, okay, what are the goals of this dynamic process and what are the mechanisms that are involved to achieve those goals.
So in terms of writing, I mean, I have a suggestion. I mean, it probably is in line with what you just said. What we can do is, you know, whatever, the research section we're going to have. In the very beginning of the research section, we're going to put up this system architecture diagram. Okay? And talk about the system architecture diagram, you know, all the different components, and then walk through an example, highlighting all the research problems that needs to be addressed, that, you know, we can work through that as if that everything is already there. And then the whole system is going to function this way. It's like we're going to do, you know, resource allocation and balancing the load of different concerns and determining the TDF and let it run, deploy the experiment, run the experiment, do online sensing, and decision making, and reshuffle the resources, and at some point necessarily have to sort of really reshuffle and recompute the TDF, and so on and so forth. And then we work through an example, highlighting all the different points, and then subsequent sections for each highlighted points, we address that particular problem. Or different components, and then sort of address that problem within the different components, right? So that's a sort of describe the entire.
So what you're saying, so if I understand correctly, you're saying first let us present the architecture of the system.
Right. We have to have a big picture. The reviewer has to have a big picture.
Okay.
What exactly it is. Right.
Right. So is that what we have in the modified section 3 with the new bullets and stuff? I know you had some concerns about the bullets that I wrote up, but is that the section that we are talking about here?
I think that's the section, right? Yes.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. It's just need to expand the section to that's the research section. So you can
the sort of research goals section,
right?
Not necessarily the research
methods
section.
Let me bring it out. Okay, yeah, you go ahead. I'll bring it out.
And then we had, in the research goals, we had some design principles listed out.
I remember last time we were still discussing what should be the contributions or the principles of the whole proposal. I guess we haven't entirely figured that out yet, right?
I wrote up what I thought were the principles,
yes.
But I know there was some disagreement as to what should be the principles.
Right. Okay.
So
if it's just what you have, like, I'll just make it bigger. So,
yeah, so we have architecture, and then we have principles.
Right.
So in the architecture, it's fairly basic. We say, okay, we have the target system is mapped to simulation and emulation instances running on virtual machines. The emulation interact with the simulation on the same scaling unit, and then a network model describing the target system consists of a topology with hosts and routers running network protocols, network services, and distributed applications together with the description of the network traffic, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then we have a set of design principles. First principle is that we want to carefully partition the target network into emulation and simulation elements. As the first principle that I thought was.
You did exactly what I was thinking, that, you know, put the overall architecture. This figure needs to be reworked down, and in terms of, you know, displaying not just, you know, the scaling units and what it is, but also need to put the mechanism, you know, where is the feedback, where is the decision making entity,
mm-hmm.
and how these, you know, who's doing what. I guess that we could have an overall system.
Right. And we have sort of outlook. This maybe a multi-level autonomic system, right? There is something running within each node.
Exactly.
Something running
yeah.
at a more.
That's something really, I think, Ming
global
has.
Scale.
Yeah, something Ming would have a far better.
I think we have another diagram. This one seems to me describing more of the mapping.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. Or maybe we could mingle them if we can.
Yeah, that'll be hard.
Probably better to keep those separate.
Yeah.
Okay. So anyway, I was
because
thinking.
This is already quite complex, you know, figured as it is.
It is true. Yeah. The principles here, I think, it's can be mingled with. We're gonna insert examples right here.
Right. So let me remind you why we had these principles, right, in the first place. The reason we had to think about coming up with principles is there was this concern from the reviewers, they didn't see the novelty,
right?
Right,
yeah.
And then we said, okay, let us put the novelty up front and say, okay, list all the things that we think are novel directions in the proposal,
yeah.
Right? And which is why we came up with these principles. I just don't want us to lose that that initial motivation for why we wrote this up.
I think it's better to have this in the first section, the very first section.
I understand, in the best case, we want like a very smooth flow and everything sort of.
Novelty is not about principles. I mean, I'm in first reaction to that. I mean, I understand. I mean, you know, we discussed this actually at some point. But I think novelty is not because of, we have the principle of.
Right, there are two kinds of novelties when you're talking about proposals, research proposals. One is the novelty of the direction of work. Are people looking to pursue this direction of work? And the second is the novelty of some mechanism inside some design
ideas,
aspect, some idea or whatever.
Right, yeah. Mm-hmm.
So here I'm talking about the global novelty or the direction of the project that we are taking and why we think this direction is a new direction and why we think it is a direction that is important and likely to succeed. Right?
But
I'm not really talking about some
but you
novelty
are.
Of...
But you are talking about something. Okay. You see, the second principle is to use a two-level mechanism.
Right.
That is the idea of a particular implementation or a particular design. This is the... I think there's novelty in general. You can't really break it down into smaller principles about a direction. Right? A direction is what are we going to use? What are we going to, you know, the virtualization, you know, all these ideas that...
Right,
you know,
but how do you use it, right? I mean, virtualization is a technology. emulation is a technology. Simulation is a technology, mm-hmm. right? How do we use this to come up with something new, right? And I think that's because you have all of these ingredients, like a recipe when you're cooking, right? You have all of these ingredients, and you can put them together in many different ways.
Yeah.
And I'm saying that this is the best recipe for this specific problem, right? Using these technology.
Right. Okay, so let's look at it from that perspective. I agree with that analysis. That was my perspective
when I wrote this up.
I think we should put all of them there. All the novelties, not just the direction. We can highlight the direction. So this is like, you know, we use all these spices to have a novel dish, right? So we're going to say what this is. Again, you know, lay out. This is what we see as this enables large-scale emulation, whatever, you know, we can put there. This is what we use, why we actually use it, we can argue about it, right? And then we're going to have specific novelties in the method leading to that. The method leading to that would have this two-level mechanism, would have whatever the determination of a time dilation factor, all these dynamics involved with it, and all these things that you're writing. And in terms of these kind of novelties, I think instead of, I'm not sure, but I'm just making a suggestion, not even a suggestion, I think it's just a thinking, a thread. Instead of just lay it out this way and nobody want to read because it's a lot of context. If you just say two-level mechanism, if I don't even know what you're doing, right, I skip that paragraph because it's all the words that does not really echo with me unless I'm looking at the particular mechanism, the overall architecture. So
I guess what you're saying is that maybe the kind of discussion that we have in these principles lacks context, and the reader might actually not follow what we're talking about.
I guess that's what happened with our previous two versions. When we say, we do this, this is our contribution, people just, you know, glaze their eyes and say, yeah, but I really don't have a resonant
on
there.
Well, remember that in the previous versions of this proposal, we didn't have these design principles.
We didn't call them design principles.
We didn't have,
but we have a lot
explicitly
of.
Say, okay, here are the novelties of our approach. We said, okay, here are some ingredients, and we're going to use these ingredients. We said, okay, time dilation and this. But we didn't say how.
Right.
How are we using it in some novelty?
Right.
And I understand that it's possible that the current write-up lacks some context. I sort of tried to make it self-contained, based on just that initial description of the, you know, simulation and emulation mapping to this infrastructure,
right.
Just based on that idea, what are the novelties that that need to that are
right.
in that direction?
Right. How? Again, another suggestion. It's we're gonna put the novelty in terms of approach right in front because that's simple. This is what we are doing is, you know, you can say it right away. We are doing simulation emulation, we are doing time dilation, we are doing all these things. That
you mean something like this?
The first principle or, the first principle. That is basically summarize the direction, the novelty of the direction.
So there is more in that first principle. What I'm talking about is not just that we want to combine simulation and emulation, but I'm saying that you have to do this, first of all, partitioning in a very careful way and say, okay, where the simulation elements are and where the emulation elements are, and how do you map these elements to the physical infrastructure, right? So that is sort of the novelty of our approach because we propose some concrete direction towards that. And I've not talked about time dilation here at all.
Right,
time dilation comes later.
So
the first principle is just partitioning and
mapping. Okay, let me just sort of have an alternative and see whether that's
we need alternatives.
We have architecture, I guess before this architecture is to say something, but with the architecture it's a lot easier to say what it is. And I'm going to say what are the high level novelties that our approach is.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you know, hybrid and all these time dilation, we just sort of to say it out there,
yeah.
Very clear.
Right.
And then start with the example.
Which means after all of this stuff.
After this stuff.
Well, we haven't said anything about the novelties.
Let me see the that's the alternative way of putting this.
Okay.
And we're going to say, you know, why we're going to say this is what the architecture. You can't just say an architecture. The architecture has to be, you know, how you work on this architecture, right? This is how the
sure.
different components work with each other. And we're going to say through the example, let's put an example and saying, you know, this architecture is work this way, partition this way. And then during the narrative, we're going to highlight our novelties. Or after that, we're going to highlight all our novelties. Say, this is, we think, as nobody have done this before, we present something really novel here. There is, we have to partition this one, that partitioning and being able to efficiently use the resources,
right.
That is something of the key question we need to address.
I don't know who this is. Hello? Hello? Yeah,
that will happen when you don't know.
Doesn't want to give him the number and doesn't want to talk to you. So, why is he calling?
He was also wondering, did I make the red call?
Yeah. Anyway, so what I'm thinking is, we highlight all the key questions and propose the solutions with a very succinct. Because whatever we say there, unless we actually going to spread it out, what it is. We can't be very articulate about the details, being articulate about the details, what it is.
The only comment I would have, I think that would be good if we can do that. The only comment I would have is the novelty, whenever we present it, has to be bulletized and
has
probably in bold.
Yes, yes.
Okay, so
yes. That has to be the way.
Because otherwise we'll get back reviews again which says we don't know what the novelty is.
Or
and
or maybe this way. Put this with example.
Mm-hmm.
Once the example is laid out, and we're gonna say why this way. You know, what are the key design points, what the novelties, and then we can say things.
As long as it's bulletized
and in
bold. Italicized or bold, I'm fine with it. Because,
right.
See, those things have to jump out of the paper
for
someone who's spending only 30 minutes reading the whole
thing. We're going to say here, the following are the novelties or contributions to this.
Right. As long as we agree on that, I'm
one,
fine.
Two,
and
three,
I agree. I mean, if we have an example integrated into this, and so that each of those problems are highlighted using the example, right,
mm-hmm.
And then
mm-hmm.
say, okay, for each of these problems, we have a set of design principles that completely solve this.
Right. Right.
Then that would be even better than what we have right now. But we don't have an example yet. So
here's an example. Okay. We can pick any now example. We have to come from something a little more ambitious than nobody have done this or...
Yeah.
Or they have done this very very nicely.
Yeah.
Okay.
You want to record it? Or
I'm recording it.
Oh, you are already.
Yeah.
Okay.
Here are several candidates.
Mm.
Right. One of the candidates is is this content distribution network.
That's great. I think, I really like the content distribution network example. If we can come up with something in that domain, it would be really good. Because there is like the whole idea of, I mean, Akamai, I don't know whether you're talking about Akamai style or Napster
it's more of a, so this is tied up with the Genie thing that we are trying to set up experiment.
Mm.
And so it's has all the keywords, like a social network, driven because of content distribution and video streaming and all these things are actually there.
Right. So just to clarify, when you say content distribution network, you do not mean peer-to-peer network, right? That's a different thing. what? Peer-to-peer is
peer-to-peer support content distribution.
The torrent and stuff like that.
Right. Yeah, it can do the content distribution, but the content distribution have so many different forms.
Yeah.
Okay, so this is a more of a several servers. You have proxies. Basically in-network caching.
Okay. Yeah.
And the replication.
Yeah.
And deliver content to users. All right.
Yeah.
So for this particular setup, it's really nice for the following. First of all, people can't test it at a larger scale because they can't really describe the demand. You have to have the user base to test your system at a larger scale, right?
Mm-hmm.
You have to say, I have close to a million users
mm-hmm.
who are retrieving data. You can't do this in real, right? In an emulation environment, you can't. So you have to put a model. So that's exactly where simulation will come in. Simulation say, I can easily provide
mm-hmm.
a request demand according to some distribution, spatial distribution, time distribution, whatever distribution that I can provide.
Correct.
Same thing applies to if you're thinking about something like a social context, social networks, and there are social network models in terms of, the idea was, if you and I are friends, and there is something I see really nice on TED.com, right, I will suggest to you, right? So if I suggest to you, I know your location, my location, if the location information can be captured and can be aggregated, we could, it doesn't have to, use names, but if you have this, you would have a better idea about all the contents being distributed in the spatial and time. And in this case, you probably can actually use some better caching mechanism to pull the content beforehand or when you actually have to kick out content when you do caching, when you validation. And if you don't kick those out, knowing that you're probably going to, have a chance that you're going to, or a group of you are going to access that particular media file. So anyway, so those kind of things can be modeled. That's where simulation comes in. And however, you can't just use simulation because the system is complicated enough. You're going to use a particular...
You mean the actual cache itself?
The cache itself,
okay.
Yes. There are systems in place.
There are storage and whatever.
Yeah, and you want to actually make use of those things. So it's natural you have to combine these two.
Mm-hmm.
So that's where the example can.
How about the clients? Do you want to simulate them?
We can simulate the clients. So simulation can simulate.
You can also, if you have real world traces,
you can
use emulation.
You can use emulation too. Yes, the
right,
traces
right.
can be used by simulation too. I mean,
but I guess the point is that we want a huge amount of scale in the clients. And we need, maybe a million clients, and
yeah.
we cannot have emulation instances for a million clients.
Yeah, So we could, create this demand, using a model or something like that,
right?
So in any case, so we use the example to show that there is mingling with, natural mingling with simulation and emulation.
Mm-hmm.
And then we can describe how this system is going to be mapped down to resources if there are.
Which six sections are we talking about now?
Right here.
The first section, the very first section of the whole proposal.
This is
actually the third section section of the proposal.
Yeah.
There is an introduction section in front of this section.
There is some background.
At least, and maybe there is one more section.
One more section of talking about. The accuracy, their reviewer feedback and saying, I don't believe you, it's not accurate. So I said last time I'm gonna pull those results
mm-hmm.
that I had with the TCP. That's really cycle accuracy.
So the second section is the background reviewer
work. Yeah.
First section is introduction.
Introduction. This is a page and a half.
In the introduction, we also want to pull the contributions this time.
Right, yeah. I guess we did.
Mm-hmm.
I guess it's an empty statement.
I think the key is to have section titles, right? To say, okay, we are proposing a new approach, right? and here are design principles and things like that. If you put those in the title, then people cannot miss it.
Okay, okay. So you're suggesting... Okay, so we're going to have introduction.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to have background.
Right. And then we'll have this one.
We have new approach.
Right.
This is the third section.
The new approach. And
the
new approach, we talk about architecture, example, and highlight design principle and contribution.
Yes.
And section four is a design...
Section four and section five remain the same, but we need to,
what was
to add some of the details in. We don't have that in this version.
Right, yeah.
Would it be too late to have the design principles?
No, we have it here.
It's like 3.3? Based on your flow.
No, section. Oh, we don't really break out the section anymore. The section is just talk about the whole approach, right? And bulletize and highlight all the...
But it seems that the principles can... the last thing in section three.
Yes.
But what can you do? If you don't even tell them what the system is, you put...
Yes.
That's what the mistake we made. We put them there. It doesn't mean anything to anybody unless you know exactly what that is. Right?
Yeah. But it's just... I don't know how many pages we'll be using until we reach the principles.
I think through the example, that is really sort of can grab the attention anybody.
Yeah.
Right? So that example is easy to follow. There is no big
word. Third section is fine. I mean, the third section is a section where we want to make the case for this project.
Mm-hmm.
To say, okay, this is a new approach, and here are the new principles and that underlie this approach.
Right.
Right? And,
right.
And that's the job of the section. As long as the first two sections are not too long,
okay.
I think we'll be fine.
Right,
Okay, let's see.
And then we can drill down to, I think what we had before was like a global mechanism and a local mechanism.
So what we'll have to do, I think, in the, just following on the example,
mm-hmm.
right? So we provide this huge CDN, whatever diagram or whatever it is that you need to have, and then maybe for some of the details, talk about maybe just one cache and with a set of clients, and what are the capabilities of the network links and the capabilities and those sorts of things and how they map. I mean, do we want to talk about that here or no?
Say it again, what do you want? You're talking about how this particular...
Right, so
sort of virtual network, basically.
Right.
You have a virtual network. Some part is simulated, some part is MDM.
We don't know that to begin with, right? First of all, we have an example.
Well, example actually knows that. I mean,
the user knows that. So, but we had to tell whoever is reviewing our proposal that here is where all of this information is coming from, right?
Right.
So mm-hmm. first we present the example, and then we say, okay, here are the points of interest, and the user will specify that this needs to be emulated, these need to be simulated.
Right.
When, and he'll also describe some other, he also needs to describe some other aspects of the model. For instance, what are the link bandwidths, latencies, and things like that, what are the capabilities, and what are the requests, what the, and all of those, you know, the, they need to be, and the, then you come up with, okay, questions, okay, here are where we are, you know, where our novel contributions are. Well, first of all, we show you how to partition the network. Well, the emulation and simulation entities are provided by the user, but still, you know, that's not enough. We need to map those
to resources,
to the physical infrastructure, and we have contributions there. And then we can say, okay, we'll talk about, well, because users in this example, different parts of the network are used at different intensity levels and even during different times of the day, then there is if we do a static mapping of the emulation and simulation nodes, then there is resource underutilization.
Right, yeah.
Well, how do we improve the utilization of the physical infrastructure using this dynamic management of resources,
right,
and those kinds of things. So we need to map each of those to the problems in the example.
Examples, exactly, yeah. So... that's actually not difficult to do, right?
Right.
So that's
the goal is to do all of that in this section.
In this section, yes.
Mm-hmm.
And then we do highlight all the design principle. I probably want to use another word.
It's
sort of like novel.
As long as it's bulletized, then
So these are the things we're looking at. And these are the things we make contribution.
Mm-hmm.
And through the example, we're going to refer to, you know, we do partitioning, but how we do the partition, look at that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we can, you know, kind of,
we
just
describe
the procedure.
We need to present a forward pointer to the specific section later on where we actually do it.
Right, yeah.
Where we actually show how we do it. Right?
Exactly, yeah.
So the whoever is interested in a very specific contribution can directly go there and look at what we actually propose.
Right, yeah.
So
okay.
That's something which is missing right now, and we need to add
the
forward pointers.
Right. So this, I think we can refine this because this might be the section that someone would read.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. They might spend the most time in this.
Yeah, section. New approach, right? Approach, new approach session. That's the one.
Yeah, I mean that's why I said we should have a title.
I think that's right. I agree
so
with that.
So people
know
exactly what to read.
Yeah. Right. I think from our last, well, then we can move on to details, and in terms of time dilation, in terms of two-level, like autonomy computing, and partitioning, whatever we think is no. I mean, we don't have to sort of get everybody there, but rather to just highlight the important things and mention those things. Nonetheless, but you know, we should really highlight what we think is nobody have done.
Right.
Right.
There was this other concern. I don't know if it was this round of reviewers or the previous round of reviewers that they were not convinced that we can do the dynamic TDF manipulation and stuff like that. And
that was. I think that's flaky in the sense that you know we're going to say this, however, because we are really. Get back to a simple approach, we shouldn't have problem with this. It's just not efficient. Really efficient would be really tight, PDF management, and everything's tight, right? We're not doing that. I think we need to address a particular concern about this machine emulation, right? It's a CPU scaling kind of thing. People don't believe it, which is a really valid point. And these guys are doing this, and this guy knows that just by TDF, increasing TDF does not mean that you scale machine performance, you know. And there are different resources and different ways of doing this. And I think we need to address that. And we have to address that. And that's the limitation of this approach. I see that as a limitation of this approach. For example, if we do CDF, you know, whether that's CDF, if we do CDN, those cache proxies. Is it running on 2.4 gigahertz or is it running on the router with 1.2 gigahertz? That's not our concern, right? The concern is it's the network processing speed, whether you are able to catch up, right? So we are dealing with I/O intensive operations, so sort of network intensive operations, rather than sort of a look at how this particular application will run on, you know, Pentium CPU or whatever CPU. We're not dealing with that at that cycle accurate level at all.
So you need to highlight that.
We have to be careful that that's a, you know, too much highlight get us into trouble.
We want to, you know,
we need to find an alternative explanation. I think this is the one that I'm driving at. And it's not like highlighting that this is our limitation. Yes, this is, you can think of this as a limitation. As a matter of fact, we don't care. So it has to be putting a spin on it. Sort of saying it in a more positive sense and saying, this is what we actually do. So those secular accurate CPU kind of scaling does not really concern us.
I think what I meant to say is we want to highlight that we are not trying to emulate a real machine, or what we are really concerned about is how fast the network events are generated, right? Not exactly what is the frequency of the CPU. That's not our concern, right? In terms of realism, right? The realism coming out of emulation is because we run real protocol, we run real applications.
We have one thing from last iteration that got us in there. remember all the formulations about the allocation, so the partitioning. So we have some kind of linear equations, a few equations, and saying this should be less than that, that should be less than the time dilation factor times that,
mm-hmm.
right? So that's where we, you know, based on that, we try to find the minimum TDF, TDF that satisfies this particular, this set of inequalities, right? So I think that is the problem, right? So if you say you're not concerned about those CPU concerns should be thrown out,
yeah.
Right.
I remember we had this discussion before. We had this discussion
right.
about
so I'm just trying to see a middle ground.
Yeah, how to present it.
How to present it. So that we do, you know, when we scale that, the time dilation factor, we do actually perceive the application running faster.
Yeah.
Right?
I remember.
It's uniform faster.
I think he mentioned about using some reference for speed.
Oh, right,
as
yeah.
the base number. And
yeah, so.
Remember that?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I wish we had recorded that.
But I
can think about it again.
Some of the argument there in saying we are not doing cycle accurate emulation for the machines. But we still concerned, right? You can't just say that, you know, we're running on this and it has nothing to do with this. I mean, some application, if you scale, if you say, I'm going to run this and I'm putting a lot of application on open world machines, which you have a 2 gigahertz machine, you won't be able to run them at you know, you multiplex them, they just can't keep up.
I guess our assumption is that we assume by scaling the CPU, we scale the actual performance of that application that will be running the emulator.
Yes,
right.
That was the assumption that people were not agreeing to.
Right.
Just because you're slowing down doesn't mean that you have a faster processor in the same proportion. Because there are some there are other entities such as cache and that scale at different rates and things like that.
But I think if we look at things from a different perspective, if we say we don't care about how fast these streams run, but we care about this thing has enough CPU cycles to run to process the network events.
Mm.
All the network applications is this. You got a pack, it's waiting cycle, right? You do a select call, you wait for things to come. And when things come, you have an interrupt, you grab the thing and do something about it, you're done with that. And that has to keep up with that.
Okay.
So it's not about how fast the CPU is running, it's about whether I have enough CPU cycles to handle all the things.
Is it processing speed of network events that is handled by the application, not the actual speed of how the application runs?
Right. Mm. So if you say I have a 2 gigahertz and then I have time dilation factor of 10, right? So basically we have a budget of 20 gigahertz, right? If you think of the relative terms, right? And that 20 gigahertz, whether that's enough to run 10 or 20 virtual machines running those emulated applications, and for them to have enough CPU cycles to handle the IO
but the thing is that is still not proportional, because remember how we allocate CPU cycles. We only allocate CPU cycles. We don't allocate cache, right? So when you allocate this application this much CPU cycles and with this much TDF, you cannot guarantee that by allocating more CPU, the application will run faster proportionally or the application's network processing speed will be increased proportionally. Right. There's no proportionality there.
No proportionality. Mm. No, what I'm saying is if you find a particular application running 100% of CPU utilization, we're in trouble. So that means that the CPU is screaming to get all the things processed.
Mm.
So that's we need to put a sensor there and see whether applications will maintain a target utilization, CPU utilization. If that's what our target is, CPU utilization, it doesn't concern us. Whether it's 80% or, you know, or 50%, it doesn't concern us about it. We don't do scaling of CPU. We can avoid that term, maybe, right? We can just say, you said, when you say, I'm going to run this application, network application, put on the CPU, and have a requirement that this particular application never actually go beyond 80% of CPU utilization, right? If you do that, in order for us to keep that...
No, target is not CPU utilization. The target is the TDF.
No, that's a user requirement. It's a CPU utilization.
Why does the user specify user CPU utilization?
Just so that I have some guarantees that this application will not be, you know, you're going to go scale.
Right.
You're going to put a lot of applications there. I need to guarantee some cycles
for my
application to run. So I just specify that whoever, you know, whether it's 2 gigahertz or 4 gigahertz, I want 80% of the CPU cycles.
For the system that we are proposing, the user is the guy that wants to run the simulation, right?
Right.
And that user does not care about the individual CPU utilization of each application, right?
I think I understand what you are saying and what you are saying also.
Okay.
So let me try to okay. Create a bit, right? So I think what Jason is saying, Ming, is that although the user might say that he wants to run on a 20 gigahertz CPU, but in the end, it is probably more useful for the user to just say that I want to ensure that wherever you run this stuff, it should not exceed 80% CPU utilization. That in turn ensures that all the network events are being processed and handled in time. On the other hand, if my software is running at 100% CPU, what it means that it is being throttled because of having less CPU, right? So I guess Jason is saying that we should not formulate the problem to wherein in the model the user specifies that, well, this guy should have 20 gigahertz CPU, but rather to say, okay, this guy should not exceed 80% CPU utilization.
Right.
Some whatever virtual CPU you give it,
yeah,
it's your business. All you need to make sure is that it does not exceed 80% CPU utilization, and that's the kind of system I want to run.
Right. Yeah.
But the CPU utilization does not directly relate to the speed.
Does not, and what Jason is saying is that the user does not really care about the speed in the end. All he cares about is the software able to run
to keep up with
the network speed or whatever processing requirements are there of the software.
So we could actually formulate this problem two ways. It's a quality of service requirement, right? It's basically, is the user say what kind of a environment you're going to run this particular application, you're going to specify some quality of service, right? One way to specify quality of service is through the hard cycles. I need a 2 gigahertz, period, right? So then you can specify that. That doesn't really...
And that is very hard to... I mean, even for the user, when he says 2 gigahertz, he's not... Unless he specifies things like, I want 32 kilobyte L1 cache and 8 megabyte L2 and 32 megabytes L3.
Yeah.
I mean, he has to specify all of that. And if he does, we cannot ensure isolation of cache.
Right.
Anyway,
then there are three ways.
Right.
So the third way is your reference model.
Right.
Right? So it's like, I'm going to run this on this. And regardless of what architecture, you use Apple, you use Dell, you use whatever, I really don't care.
Mm-hmm.
How large size, I really don't care. But I want that to be proportionally sort of running on that, right? So that's another way of specifying quality of service.
Right. Even that is very hard to implement.
Even that is very hard to implement.
But I think what you have makes a lot of sense to me.
Is that something that people use typically? I mean... To users of simulators, is that typical for them to specify CPU utilization?
So
it's not as much about CPU utilization as much as ensuring that the software is not bottlenecked by a physical resource, right? So that the CPU does not create and sort of this bottleneck because of the resource allocated to it, which introduces some artificial behavior, some throttling in the application itself.
Since the entire platform is not guaranteed any emulation, machine cycle emulation at all, so I don't want you to run my application and shortchange me by stuffing all the application running there and actually gonna influence that, you know, they're gonna elbow each other and actually affect the behavior of the application.
So
this is a way of keeping the elbow room, right?
So what I was thinking just now is that you see in the end, the CPU allocation, how much CPU we're gonna allocate to each virtual machine is decided by the TDF.
Right.
And what you are saying is that in addition to that, you also want to have a margin.
Right.
So that...
So it's not that the amount of allocation is only decided by TDF, it's feedback. Right? TDF is a mechanism that we insert. So for instance, if I, instead of 1 gigahertz, I run the machine at 2 gigahertz, because at 1 gigahertz CPU is 100%, I can keep the TDF the same by slowing down time by half for that specific VM. Right? So we could do those things. Right. Initially, I was interrupting the CPU at a certain frequency. Now I give the CPU 2 gigahertz so that the application can run faster, and I interrupt half the frequency. So the TDF remains the same, although I change the CPU clock, although I change the CPU allocation.
The TDF is decided globally,
right?
Throughout the entire system.
Right.
Now, assuming that you have a fixed TDF, and based on the TDF, you can calculate the CPU allocation to each virtual machine.
Right.
And the
given that I have some initial CPU allocation to respect, but I think what Jason is saying that there is no such initial CPU allocation to respect, but there are network links to respect. So my TDF is going to be based on my network bandwidth that needs to be presented to the machine, to the virtual machine.
Let me put on to the terms. I think there is a connection from the utilization and TDF. So we have 2 gigahertz machine, right? Suppose we calculated there is a target X, you know, eventually we're going to solve X, what the TDF is. Suppose we say at 10, right? So basically we have a 20 gigahertz budget, right? We're going to put on the application virtual machines on top of this. Well, it depends on the machines, you know, how many applications we can run simultaneously, and so that they maintain their, each application have their particular requirement of their CPU cycles, right? Suppose if I know this particular application running on a 2 gigahertz machine can take 50% of the CPU with normal traffic. Okay, suppose I know. Okay, so if that's the case, that means that it actually needs 1 gigahertz CPU, sort of. If I know that running on 1 gigahertz CPU, so that means if I'm gonna run it on a 20 gigahertz budget, I can actually put 20, what did I say? 20 of them, right? I can put 20 of them still, if they are not stealing each other's cycle, if they are, they're optimal,
That's the same as what we proposed last time, right?
But I need to formulate this from the user's perspective, right? Eventually, yes. Of course, there are a lot of gaps here. Does the application really say running 50% of the CPU cycle and then you scale up the network speed by 10 times, it's still 50% CPU cycle? I don't know. I just sort of put there initially. And that has to be a sensor there so that, you know, if this thing is not going to work,
But even the 50% you mentioned there is assuming that the cycle that where the 50% is measured is the same as the cycle on 20 gigahertz machine.
Yeah.
I don't quite understand.
So we measure the 50%, where do you measure it?
50% of the virtual CPU allocation.
That's measured on the 2 gigahertz machine.
Right.
And then while you run it on a 20 gigahertz machine.
Right, but that is a hard limit of 2 gigahertz for the virtual machine, right?
So when you write a 2 GHz machine, you know that this application only needs 1 GHz.
Right.
And then you write a 20 GHz machine. That does not mean you only need 1 GHz on the 20 GHz machine, because the cycle may be different.
Right.
So you cannot just allocate 1 GHz based on whatever you measured. We're running on a different machine.
Right, because the cache is different.
Yeah,
But coming from just purely allocation point of view, eventually it's gonna make you know, we don't have a 20 GHz machine in the first place, right? We really don't know what that is. But from that machine's point of view, it's not running on the 20 GHz machine. We want to give that machine the impression it's actually running on a 2 GHz machine. We just time dilated. We suddenly have 20 GHz budget, right? So that we can allocate several machines. Everybody got, you know, if everything cut out.
My question is how does the user specify that? I still don't understand that. How does the user specify this 50%? How does that work?
Maybe not 50%. Maybe a kind of, you know, this is back to user, how users specify quality of service,
yeah,
right?
Right,
so basically, what do you care? Are you really care about whether it's 50% or 60%? I hardly believe that anybody would care.
Well, admins look at that primarily, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, when sysadmins provision servers, then they look at what is the baseline. Okay, this server, whatever, web server or database server, uses 70% CPU on a 3 GHz processor, and that's fine.
Mm-hmm.
70% is the utilization that I'm willing to accept,
mm-hmm.
right?
Mm-hmm.
If it is higher than 70%, maybe there is a cause for concern,
right?
Because that value is just an average value, so there may be instantaneous
values
which exceed, you know, 95 or whatever it is. So the admin doesn't want to have his server running at 95% utilization, right? Because that means the CPU is most likely bottleneck, and I don't want my services to be bottlenecked by the CPUs that I provide for them, right?
But from a user's perspective, you're running a cache.
Right.
There, I mean, a CDN proxy there. Do I really care?
Also? Some admin is going to manage that CDN proxy in the end, right?
So there is some target. There is some target.
Right.
It depends on a lot of things.
Right.
I mean, that's the worst case, right? So basically, if I don't have traffic, that CDN is really cheap. There is nothing.
Right. So what
there's
we can
no
say, what we can say, for instance, is that we want to manage the emulation nodes just as admins will manage physical nodes in a real network infrastructure.
What do you mean by that?
How do you do that?
Well, real admins will see, okay, this node is running at 99% CPU, and again, now we are talking about a virtualized infrastructure, then the admin will come in and allocate more CPU for this guy. Right? Otherwise, the service is going to suffer because of lack of CPU.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Similarly, in our virtual network infrastructure, we're monitoring all of these utilizations and say, okay, well, if this VM is running at 95% utilization, we need to provide more CPU. Which is sort of going to where you are coming from,
right?
To say, okay, who is the user of this software that we're building? We're some network scientists, but in the end, all the management is not, if something like that is deployed in the real world, the management of how much CPU and all of that is not being by the network science researcher, right? It's in the end some admin in some data center who's going to manage allocations.
Most likely, it's going to be like this. It's going to be, well, you got a time dilation of 10. Well, that afford us to suppose that people are going to run applications on precisely the same architecture, right? Have same cache or whatever. We can afford us to run 10 machines.
We don't know, right? I mean, and that's the whole point in which you are saying. And the QoS is very different than what is the physical capabilities and requirements.
Maybe the target should not be CPU at all. It should be the network IOPS. So we are talking about you don't want to overload the CPU is because you won't have enough, you know, cycles to process the IOs, right? Maybe the IOPS is talking to you.
But the CPU is the more easily monitorable entity here, right?
Yeah, I understand. But
the network IOPS is not necessarily always going to be sustainable, right? And
yes.
I mean, so there is the points in time where there is idleness, and then I have low network IOPS doesn't mean that low network IOPS is because I provided less resources. That application didn't have traffic to send over the network.
I understand.
But on the other hand, with CPU, I know if the CPU is 10%, I know the application doesn't have anything to do at that point. On the other hand, if the CPU is utilization is 95%, I know application has things to do, but I'm not given it enough CPU.
I just don't see a direct connection from the CPU utilization to the CPU, the actual CPU allocation that we're going to do for the virtual machine.
So it's sort of this feedback, right? So we are sensing that the CPU utilization is above the threshold, 70% or whatever it is, where the admin starts becoming uncomfortable, right?
That's the worst case scenario, right? That's what are you describing as the worst?
I'm talking about the regular case scenario.
Regular case in the worst sense, because you're saying I can't tolerate anything above what,
75% utilization.
Right. But if you lower, I'm comfortable, it's just a resource underutilization.
Yeah.
But if you go beyond that, I'm not comfortable because that's actually breached the
right.
You know the agreement.
Right.
Right.
And similarly, I mean, you bring up a very good point. If it's low utilization, then the admin, once again, what does the admin do? Everything is running at 10% utilization. Is that good or bad? It's probably not good.
How do we fit this in our resource allocation scheme? Okay. Now, what the scheme we have now is that we set the TDF globally, and based on TDF, we calculate the CPU allocation for each virtual machine. We make sure that each virtual machine have enough CPU cycles for its emulating application to maintain that TDF. Right? That's how we manage the resources.
No.
That's what we have last time.
Not really. No. I don't look at it that way anymore. Because now we have from what I understand where Jason is coming from, we completely eliminate the CPU requirement specification from the user point of view. So the user doesn't say, I want a 2 gigahertz CPU.
I understand.
Which is what we used initially to say, okay, given a TDF, how much do I need to allocate because I need to make it appear like 2 gigahertz. So now it's more in terms, well, TDF is something completely independent, and it is related to how frequently the CPU is being interrupted, right?
Mm-hmm.
And that can be controlled independent of how much CPU we allocate for the virtual machine.
Okay. See, how do you propose to allocate CPU now?
So now the allocation would be for making sure that the resources are not underutilized, and to make sure that the CPU doesn't become a bottleneck for the application. So
in terms of the static resource allocation, there is a dynamic part. In the static, it's the user specify the requirement in terms of utilization. Suppose this is one way of specifying, right? We can still sort of stick to the other ways.
Mm.
And this is still can be translated to CPU requirement. You know, it's a budget, right? Again, it's a 20 gigahertz budget.
No, we cannot. We will also need that input as what is the original CPU clock.
We
calculate a percentage of that and we can map it. And
right.
What I'm suggesting is exactly what you were suggesting before, which is eliminate that requirement altogether. And then make it a completely sort of dynamic process. But then that raises the question about initial placement.
Yeah.
And how do we make the initial?
Right. Yeah. So
and,
that's
and
that would. Yeah.
Right. So what we can do is that we can have some random initial placement, and say that very quickly we'll converge to what is the.
That's the key point. That's actually remember we have an optimization problem. The optimization problem saying you have some network demands. You want a gigahertz, gigabits per second network. You have a particular utilization on that network as well.
Mm-hmm.
It's more than just the network, and you're not using it. That we don't want to underestimate. There's some utilization for that network as well. And from that, and some we're going to calculate in terms of how many things
the actual link, maybe a virtual link, has a bandwidth of 10 gigabit per second, and I want 100 gigabit per second. And the way I achieve that is to slow down the ticks to the CPU by a factor of 10.
Not necessarily, right? So it could be, I can, you know, in from the previous approach and say I can slow it down. It depends on how much resource I have. If I don't have enough resources, I have to scale far better, far worse than that, right? I can slow down to, you know, have a TDF of 100.
Mm-hmm.
Even though I'm over time dilated, you're going to compensate for that by some other means.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Am I right?
By some other means.
So if you think about the optimization problem is to find the minimum TDF that can satisfy all the resource requirement. That resource including, originally including CPU and network, right? And then we sort of find a placement of these virtual machines and the links so that the TDF is minimal.
Right, and we ran into a problem with how we're going to map this 2 gigahertz CPU to some other higher CPU or lower CPU with a TDF, and it doesn't work exactly that way. And the reviewers killed us for that.
No, reviewers not kill us for that. It's kill us for the machine part of it. They don't believe the machine part of it is actually a uniform time dilated.
The way I understood the reviewer comment was that the reviewer thinks it's not very easy to just say, okay, I want a 10 gigahertz CPU, and I'm going to use a TDF of 5 on a 2 gigahertz CPU and get 10 gigahertz.
Right.
That was the problem. Very fundamentally, if you look at that comment, he's saying that you cannot really use that as a user input because the user specifying 10 gigahertz actually cannot be faithfully reproduced.
True, yes. So that's why we are trying to other kind of a quantitative requirement. But still, it's an optimization problem because what happened is I can't, you know, if you give me two machines, okay, you want to have a time, you know, I have 100 megabits per second link, all right, and you want a, you know, 1 gigabit link, and you want this, you want that, and then, you know, when I place all these things on top of this, I say, well, when I calculate the total sum of resource, I can't provide you unless I'm time dilated to, you know, 150,
mm-hmm.
something I can calculate,
right?
When I calculate time dilation of 150, what are the variables? The variables are my placement, right? Under a particular placement, I calculate 150. If I shifted it here and there, I calculate 125, right? Which one I adopt? I adopt 125 because that gives me a fewer, you know, less time dilation factor. I utilize the resource better.
Can you explain again what exactly does the user specify?
Two things. One thing is, it's a network, basically a network.
Uh-huh.
In the network, you have nodes and links.
Uh-huh.
For the links, you specify the maximum speed
uh-huh.
and utilization of
uh-huh.
that, right? So we wanted the true, basically,
the
speed. And for node, you specify several things.
Mm-hmm.
You can specify the utilization, basically utilization based on a particular, say, 2 gigahertz, whatever, that, you know, we can discuss mm-hmm. what that particular thing that you specify, or you can...
Yeah, well, utilization is, I see it as independent of the clock frequency, right? I'm just thinking as a system admin, managing some service in a data center, and in the end, if we want to be as close to real as possible, we probably want to manage our virtual resources in the same way.
I agree. I think both have reasons. But is it possible just to specify the network throughput for this particular service or application?
If you just specify
throughput.
Well, one of the things that this user might want to know is what is the throughput. Because they could not run these things at scale. They don't know the throughput, right? That may be one of the output of the experiment itself,
mm-hmm.
throughput of the application
on
the given network model.
Mm-hmm.
What is the throughput of the application?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Where are the bottlenecks? That sort of stuff.
Okay. I'm just trying to get the CPU out of the picture. it's
more than the CPU out of the picture. There are all these resources, including network resources. When I say utilization, I really sort of
no.
Have
why are you averse to having CPU utilization? I think Jason hit on goldmine here, in fact, because that's like the solution for all our problems right now, or at least that specific comment that the reviewers had, which is, in the end, what you need to ensure is not whether I have virtual CPU of 20 gigahertz, I need to ensure whether the application that's running on that processor has enough CPU.
Mm-hmm.
And at the same time, another objective is to avoid underutilization. So just by monitoring the CPU utilization, we can make dynamic adjustments and ensure that.
The reason that you won't have enough CPU is to have enough cycles to process network events.
Whatever, I mean, the application may be doing many other things besides processing network events, right?
It may be doing some transcoding
or whatever. You know, if I have a low-resolution client, the server also does additional things with the CPU.
Yeah, my point of view is maybe simpler. I completely, you know, think from the point of view of network simulation, and so whatever I care about is just related to network. And,
right.
We are not actually creating applications that simply just handle network events. It's more of a, you know, you have to have this enough speed to handle.
Whatever the application does, you know, so they are computing. The application
right.
does computation and does I/O handling, right?
Right.
So whatever cycles you need for computation, that's fine. Let it be as what the application should use. And then on top of that, we need this much of cycles for processing the network speed, network events based on the speed of network that we want to simulate.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I think we should have them all. Because at a certain point, you do need some sort of a... I'm just thinking, you know, this is could be an hour. It could be a interconnection network for a data center, you know, right? I would like to my applications not only to simulate that or emulate my network behavior correctly, but also I want my application to have a certain sense of, you know, the efficiency. You know, it's an MPI program. It's running a particular computation. A particular computation would require, you know, it will run this fast on, you know, I'd like to have 2 gigahertz performance, you know, even though I'm not saying that performance, but at least I know this is going to run on your system. I have some the reference, you know, so that I know exactly that application can run there and how it actually performs, right? Over time. Or I would just say, you know, 2 times your speed, would that be, you know, if I know I'm going to run that on the IBM Blue Jeans, which actually have, you know, smaller things, smaller resources, I know that actually I'm going to run 1 gigahertz, whatever it is, or half of the performance as what you have. But I have a lot of nodes. I want to see how's that actually going to scale, you know, in that case. I might have that reference model that you referred previously
mm-hmm.
as well. I don't want to just to say that we only come from Quartosaurus, you know, specification from a utilization point of view. That satisfies some of the applications. For other applications, we can do this with a caveat, right? You have to understand that you do this, you know, uniform scaling right now. So the real, you know, there is no architecture. Nobody specified how large the size. Nobody specified anything. It's just the saying my speed is half of that speed or twice the speed, right? You only say that. And if this is actually okay with a particular experiment requirement, then it's okay for me because I know that what's the drawback of this approach. But that still can give me some kind of good answers, right? And that actually is tied to the CPU requirement. That's actually tied to the allocation stuff as well. So I was just trying to think that with all these different combinations of the requirement that one specifies, we have the same mechanism, mm. right? So if you specify utilization, I can still X-ray. Because when you say utilization, I'm going to think about what you utilize. So you say 60%, you didn't specify any what type of CPU. So the CPU I'm using to run your application is going to be this CPU, right? This particular platform.
Yeah, let me jump in very quickly here. In fact, I would argue that the user should not even specify utilization, right? Because it's hard to specify utilization, which is, I think, where you're going, without some sort of a reference thing.
Right.
So we can make it as simple as user just specifies network requirements.
That's what Ming just said, right?
Right. So, and we just go with that, and then figure out how to allocate CPU ourselves, and make it more of a dynamic optimization problem than a static allocation problem.
True or false? yes or no, I guess. In a sense, if you only specify our requirement, I can give you the our requirement, right? Mm-hmm. But if I don't give you
the network, I'm not saying IO requirements. I'm talking about network.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
Capability and utilization. That's all. Not IO operations.
How do you specify network capability without
like network link bandwidth, latency?
Right. But let's put it this way. Okay. So suppose you determined that a time dilation factor to be 10. And in order for me to get 10, I have to put these 100 applications on this machine, okay, to fully utilize the resource. Well, happens to be HR applications are actually pretty CPU demanding and well cooked. There's no way we are, you know, with the time and dilation, with that budget, we'll be able to support 100.
How do you determine you need 100 virtual machines, 100 applications from the time dilation factor?
No, we come from this part. We come from some initial allocation scheme, right? So here's a network. Here's all links. Links has their bits per second requirement, and we say for this. And we have a sort of idea about inter-VM communication speed.
Mm-hmm.
We have some idea what the physical networking
mm-hmm.
speed.
Mm-hmm.
And we're going to map those down,
mm-hmm.
right? We're going to put these set of nodes on this
mm-hmm.
machine, this set of nodes on this machine, between how many machines I have. I have
mm-hmm.
10 machines, say, on this cluster. And from there, I calculate what would be the time dilation
uh-huh.
factor. Only based on, in your case, only based on network resource.
Okay.
Right? So we could just say that particular network link requires 10 megabits per second, that's 10 megabits per second, that's 100 megabits per second, that's 100 megabits. We add them up, right? We add them up and say, can you support it? If you can't support it, I scale it.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So that's we will calculate time dilation lag.
Okay.
But all these calculations ignore one important factor. That's my argument.
Uh-huh.
Important factor, how many applications are there? Because
right.
they're going to take up the CPU.
Yes.
They're going to compete
yes.
with each other. And if you don't put that there, you know, you could end up in a scenario, as I said, with 100 applications there, all
yeah.
you know, satisfy that requirement. But however, they elbow each other. They're going to compete for CPU. You're going to have a...
Your emulating network becomes highly underutilized, right?
How do you specify? Network utilization is based on the target traffic.
Mm-hmm.
The traffic,
mm-hmm.
we don't know. That's
yeah.
why we simulate it, right?
Yeah.
And the how you partition the right. how you partition the virtual network and map it.
Yeah.
Because then the network physical network utilization is the
right,
is the flow between this part of the graph and that.
And
part
we
of
don't
it.
Know what is
but,
the what's the ground zero,
but,
right?
But,
we don't know what's the truth.
Can you specify the request rate from the client?
We can't.
The request rate. Because the reason
the thing is that take the real application, the CDN,
uh-huh.
right? Put there, and we want to have this to have an accurate emulation, right? The accuracy should be there. So you come up with some kind of throughput or something, and you're going to ask yourself whether this is true or not. We don't know.
No, but right? I'm talking about the request rate, not the throughput.
Request rate.
Well, I'm trying to think why we propose to specify the CPU frequency in the first place.
Mm.
Because we thought that it's related to how fast the application runs and how fast the events are generated.
Mm-hmm.
Is that really right? So that seems
It's like trying to achieve a futuristic.
A futuristic, right? Because in the future hardware, the application runs faster and the traffic becomes heavier, something like that, right? So that seems to be related to the request rate.
Mm-hmm.
How fast you generate the request. It's not the throughput, because the request rate can be different than the throughput.
Mm-hmm.
How fast you generate requests. Each request mean what? It's a send? Receive?
It's a client request.
It's a client request. The CDN, I don't know what you run, maybe Twitter, you run Twitter on CDN, and then it's the message they send out on the Twitter.
The push messages.
Uh-huh.
And the user needs to know the target request.
The user needs to know, because
sometimes, well, for client maybe, for reactive application, it is not, right?
Okay.
I'm a router. You ask me what's the target, I don't know. You have a packet, I'm going to process that packet.
Twitter is a perfect example. The number of packets or number of places where a certain message is going to be forwarded to depends on the distribution list of that specific client. It's like embedded in the logic of the application, right? It's very hard for the user to specify those things explicitly, and it's changing. You see, one guy sends it, it's something else, and the other guy who's much more popular has a 1 million following, right? And that creates 1 million messages.
Yeah.
So how do you specify these things?
So, after all this discussion, I think it's still important to have a CPU requirement.
Yes, I agree.
It has to be a CPU requirement. Because what happened is that's a bottleneck resource that we have to consider, because we can't just put everything there. It's the best scenario is put everything in there in one machine and having all the virtual emulator machines on top of it. This is the best scenario.
I think utilization is the way to go, because we can also justify it to say that, well, from an admin standpoint, that's what will happen. Even when deployed, the user might not know what the utilization is.
You have to have the server before
the whole thing is deployed.
But you have to have an initial guess, right?
Initial guess is, well, I want my utilization to be below 70%. That's the initial guess. But I don't know what the actual utilization is going to be until I run the application, which in our case, start the whole thing, right? And then we'll know what the actual CPU utilization is.
Actually, I think we can work through the example with different kind of resource requirements for CPU. One is just like what you said. It's an utilization target or maximum, right? You can't go beyond this. You go beyond this, the behavior of this application is going to change. That target, of course, from the user perspective, the higher the better, but the higher it is, the more resource underutilization it's going to bring, right? So it's your call. It's as a user, and you give me a target, and then you don't concern the next everything else. There are still some other things that actually require some resource utilization. As I said, those parallel applications would have some basic reference model that's running, as unit time, or maybe running on that, I have half of the time I want to look at the scalability of this thing under that,
So here's my suggestion then. We can have a very simple example, which is the utilization based, and then we can say, okay, with for something like this, it's very hard to do the initial placement in an optimal way for CPU. We can do it for network perhaps, but for CPU, we have to wait for the dynamics of the application to inform us what are the best allocations for CPU of various elements in the network, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then we can also say, but for some other applications which are very well behaved and very easily describable, like HPC or whatever we have, we can also do much better initial placement if we have a reference model and corresponding utilization specified.
Yeah.
That's right.
That's true.
Yes.
So when you say CPU utilization, you mean the CPU utilization of the application running inside of the virtual machine?
Yes.
Right.
Yeah. So that is easy to satisfy. Even though you didn't say what CPU you're on, it's better to say running on any CPU.
Yeah.
If you're running on this CPU, if you map down to the CPU, that's the utilization.
Yeah.
You have to have the utilization.
You know that that's not directly dependent on the network, the IO processing, right? You want to say you want to have 90% CPU utilization of the application is because you want to have 10% for
everything else. I'm not saying that we want a specific utilization.
You want to ensure that it's below a certain value. Yeah, the reason is that you want to have enough CPU cycles for system activity.
Right.
And then it's up to the, I think that makes sense. It's up to the dynamic part.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's worst case. That means that we are being conservative.
Mm-hmm.
So you tell me the maximum, you're being conservative, you know, push everything away,
mm-hmm.
so that only a few of them here guarantee that you're going to have 70% of CPU utilization.
Right.
All
right.
Of course, in real running, I figure out this is only taking 10%, or
right.
even less.
Right.
You know, we are way underutilized. This is where the next stage of this algorithm is going to kick in, right?
I agree. So two questions. One is that when you specify the CPU utilization,
the maximum
case, and the margin that you leave there is not directly relevant to the I/O processing speed. Okay, if you leave 10%, that does not mean that you have only 10% to process the I/Os, right?
No, I mean I'm talking about whatever CPU is required for everything, including processing of I/O, everything. See, when you process I/O, you need CPU, and that will show up in the CPU utilization.
So you're actually talking about the CPU utilization of the entire virtual machine?
Entire virtual machine.
Okay,
yes.
Now here's the question. If you specify the CPU utilization as 100%, okay,
I have no admin would want to run any machine at 100%.
Assuming, this is a number you can specify, right? It can be 90%, 100%, 70%, whatever.
Well, I'm saying that the user shouldn't even specify that. Let's take away that power from the user.
I'm trying to think about from the point of view how to really allocate CPU cycles, right? You remember before when we were doing this, we based on TDF, based on the CPU frequency you want to eliminate, we somehow calculate initial placement after that. Okay, that is already done.
Right.
And then we do dynamic CPU allocation.
Right.
Then we determine the allocation to each virtual machine based on TDF.
Yeah.
And what else? Okay. And then we make sure that each virtual machine is 100% utilizing its allocated CPU.
Mm-hmm.
If it is not, that means the resource is underutilized. We could increase the TDF.
Or decrease the TDF.
I don't think it's a good idea to say, okay, every VM should use 100% of its CPU, because 100% could also mean 200%. And there's no way of differentiating between whether the CPU is just being used at 100% or is the CPU a bottleneck. So you would never want to have a machine run at 100% CPU utilization.
No. Because we calculate the TDF somehow, and if the CPU becomes a bottleneck, then the network processing speed will be slowed down, and the virtual machine,
the problem is that you cannot differentiate between whether the network
processing
is being slowed down or the application
because on each physical machine there's a simulator. If one particular virtual machine is not communicating with the simulator on the same pace, that means that the virtual machine is slowed down. It's not catching up with that TDF. I think that's what was proposed last time. We use the simulator event. The simulator also needs CPU. Okay. We use the simulator as the synchronizing point of all the virtual machines on the same physical machine.
Okay.
Okay. Yeah. That's how we decide how to adjust the TDF.
Right.
Okay.
Right.
So now I'm still having trouble to fit this CPU utilization into this picture here. Okay. So what we were proposing before is that we want to make sure that the CPU we allocate to each virtual machine is fully utilized, with the assumption that the TDF can be maintained. Okay.
Right.
If the TDF can be, cannot be maintained, if the CPU cycle is not enough, TDF cannot be maintained. We can detect that from the point from the simulator.
Right.
We slow down the TDF. If the CPU is not fully utilized, we can see that too. We can see the CPU utilization from the virtual machine, and then we can increase TDF.
Right.
That's what we were doing last time.
Not increase TDF necessarily. We could also do resource reallocation.
True. If there are other bottlenecks,
What I see the problem is exactly the same in terms of the back end.
Right.
I think what's different is we are working. We're not increasing the system's the capability anyway.
Right.
So there is limitations anyway. So that we are not doing emulation of the machines. So there is no way to get around it. I think it's a way to articulate what are the requirements that the user can specify.
Right. I agree.
Right.
That seems to be tricky.
Right.
Yeah.
So when you specify this way, utilization or some other ways, I'm not excluding those.
Yeah.
I think we can still have those there. But with the understanding, when you specify the way, that push the partitioning strategy different, and pushing out the all this. In the end, the calculation is exactly the same. If you say 50% CPU utilization, you map onto that machine, that I calculate immediately how many machine cycles I have to give it to that, right? So that's the same from the back end. Part is exactly the same. The same optimization algorithm in terms of placement, and the same strategy that you do, the two level strategy needs to apply as well.
Yeah.
I don't see any difference there.
I agree that all of that remains the same. The only change is that the user does not specify any CPU for any CPU requirements for any of the nodes, and
for that particular quality of service. Specification method.
Right, exactly. And for some other applications which are more well behaved, they can specify the CPU,
right,
and they can also specify some sort of CPU utilization requirements.
Right, yeah.
Or maximum CPU utilization requirements.
Yeah.
In the extreme case, they don't specify any CPU utilization requirement. And then we would do what the admin would do in the real world, which is to ensure that the CPU utilization does not exceed a certain threshold.
Mm-hmm.
As well as some other dynamic reallocation if the CPU utilization goes beyond a certain value. Now the TDF will inform us whether it's going up or below and those kinds of things. You can still integrate the feedback from the simulator or whatever it is to make these adjustments to the allocations. So I think it all fits in any case. So we can look at whether there is feedback from the simulator saying, okay, well, this VM is not keeping up with the time. And then that should also correspond with an increase in CPU utilization,
mm-hmm.
right,
mm-hmm.
beyond the threshold. And then because there is two sources of information telling us that this VM is under provision, we increase the CPU for that.
I don't see why we need to leave a margin there.
Maybe the margin does not have to be as high because now we have a way to know exactly when the CPU is the bottleneck because the simulator will tell us or something like that.
Yes.
So I agree. That may be an improvement.
Because when you set the TDF, that's based on the simulator's processing capability, right? And that is
the simulator is going to process the events, the network events. Okay, but. Still, you have to have a measurement of a CPU utilization for that particular VM, right?
Of course, that's already there.
That's outside the simulator, right?
Right.
What Ming is saying is that, what sysadmins today, why do they want to ensure that CPU utilization is below 70% always? Because if it's above 70%, there is no other way to know whether the CPU was a bottleneck or not. But in our case, we do not have to maintain such a fat margin of 30%, right? We can have a much smaller margin because we will know by other means whether the CPU is the bottleneck because the events that are coming from this VM will...
I disagree. But I understand that you don't need that 30% margin just to waste that margin so that they keep that 30%, 70%.
So
but it's not from the simulator. Okay. The simulator can detect that. I mean, the simulator is only going to handle the events.
So
I mean, you don't know whether what is the supposed number of events rate coming from that VM.
The timestamp of packets that are coming out, or whatever it is that needs to be. Is that what you're trying to say?
No, I disagree on that point. Because you don't know what the timestamp should be.
I need to review the proposal. I don't know what was there. Yeah, I think we need to think about this.
I think there has to be a monitoring process again. It's probably not need 30% margin. You could translate it into a 90% margin, but it can't be 100%. You're 100%, you can't tell anything.
There must be a way to know that you haven't allocated enough CPU. Must be a way. It must be in the proposal. Otherwise, there's loophole there. Yeah, I need to review that.
There will be a way to get the CPU utilization.
Right. I think it's perhaps related to the time.
Below
the PDF not being maintained.
Yeah, that's what I'm thinking too.
But please look into it.
You need to look into more.
So I guess we have overshot our time of the discussion this time.
I would like to suggest that we have some plan of action today, right? In terms of what we are
going
to do.
That will push me doing things. I'm sorry.
We need to have some plan of action.
I think what we could do, I think this chapter 3 is the key, right? So we're going to work on this chapter 3. In order to work on the chapter 3, we have one diagram to show the per scaling unit how it actually works.
Mm-hmm.
We need another diagram to show this two-level autonomous system. And how the simulator, I guess that's where tied down to the very last comments about that. And the example, I can definitely do the example.
That's another diagram.
Yeah, that's we don't need a diagram. We don't need any.
Yes.
Using too many diagrams, we're probably gonna run out of space.
Mm-hmm.
I was suggesting if we can have one diagram, but if we can't do one diagram, to do two, right? So example is actually kind of describe. It's a description. Write a description and then highlight all the research contributions and mingle that with that. And the good thing about having the example is later on in our section 4 or 5, we can constantly come back to this example. It's like, here is,
example,
when you specify.
For example,
you can specify, we can constantly refer back, right?
Yeah.
So action list.
you tell us.
I think at least what I can work on the two-level resource management section again to see, based on all this proposal we have so far, how does the user specify that, right?
User specification is just that particular point is just to get us avoid that particular concern about CPU thing. Right?
And I think it's beyond that in my opinion. It's not just to avoid that concern, it's also to map it to what happens in reality today, right? How do admins manage utilizations and things like that? Because in the end, what we want to mimic is what would happen in 2010 in reality. How would admins manage stuff? And what would be the response of the application?
That's one way.
Yeah.
There are other ways.
That's
behavior.
One way.
That's only, I see it only in one way. It's the other thing is that, just like you said, a reference model. I'm not doing a machine simulation emulation. So I can only think, the machine is going to be 4 times faster.
Yeah.
But IO speed is going to be like this. So I want to see how this application behaves under that kind of scenario.
Okay.
To summarize, I think the QoS is from the application user's point of view, and the securitization from the system admin's point of view, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Right.
So people.
Yeah.
Okay. So I'm going to think about all these different scenarios and how to incorporate them into the CPU, the resource allocation scheme.
Okay.
Right.
So back to the action. What are we going to do next time? Definitely we're going to work out section 3. I guess that has to be all three of us get to a certain, finding it satisfiable solution to put there. That includes the figure, includes the example, includes all the highlights.
Okay. I would recommend that the two of us, we can work together on section three, because I've started it off, and
right.
now you have some ideas about the example, and then we can work together.
Okay.
And Ming's efforts are focused better elsewhere.
I still want to have that figure.
Yes, that's what I just said.
Yeah, that's
what kind of background.
Yeah, I want that figure, because that figure is, through the example, we're going to say, this is how to exercise that part, how the things got to reallocate it.
Okay.
Even though we don't say the details how things, but people would understand, the reviewer would understand,
yeah.
this is a mechanism doing placing.
You're talking about the multi-level autonomic,
right, yeah.
two-level autonomic.
Right, yeah.
Okay. But I can have a draft first, okay?
Right.
But then until we figure out how exactly we want to allocate the resource,
and that's,
I won't have the arrows.
Yeah, we don't.
okay. Yeah.
Right, yeah. We probably won't be able to have them. Yeah, that's not the place of section three to really tell the details about how this action will work. This is specific.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Okay.
I guess we won't meet until 2 weeks from now, right? Or
we can meet right after the next week instead of a Thursday.
You need to work on your tenure.
That has to be on a constant. I mean, that's according to Shuqing, that has to be the highest priority. I want to make it the highest priority.
What is that of that?
I think the department is going to discuss it in September.
September.
The department will be the first point of agenda for the department,
yeah.
And so which means that your file has to be ready before August 23rd.
The good thing is that one of my letter writers is going to be at the conference,
okay.
Right? So, and he will have a direct connection with the other, so I can talk to him very urgently. I need to provide that, but you know there are other work that I have to provide the files that, but.
Maybe you want to get it out of the way first, so it can be 100% focused on the book. I don't know, it's up to you. If there's a lot of writing involved for the title
factor. By next Friday, I have another proposal, but I'm not PI, not PIing, so that's I'm going to work out this weekend.
I'm okay, except for the baby.
Coming
baby.
The worst summer I ever experienced. And the other summers was like after summer, I'm getting, say, oh, now I have to speed up. This is like after the semester started, oh, now I can slow down. Like, I don't have to run around with so many other things.
But this conference is a big achievement, too, for you.
Yeah,
that picture is scary. I don't like that picture. This is Miami at all.
Sorry. it doesn't look like very good. But
it's like a scary movie.
I stayed for 1 hour to work on that. But the color doesn't really show up well. But that's fine. That's the least of my concerns. Okay. Yeah.